Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Twins win today. They get tomorrow off. Tomorrow on Drive Time, we're going to have a Minnesota Twins pitcher who didn't get traded. We were worried about it. He didn't get traded. He is collaborating at a smoothie. Very interesting. So we'll talk about that during To Russia Eats tomorrow. Let's get going. It is 5 o'clock. Always, we get you up to date on the stories that are of greatest interest to us. We think they'll be of interest to you, too. We call it the D-Rush Hour.
The headlines you might have missed. Without missing a beat, this is your fast pass through the biggest and most impactful stories of the day. Welcome to the DeRush Hour headlines, starting with the lead.
And our lead story is new security at the state capitol, security that went into effect today. We had the case of someone who broke into the capitol over the weekend and was found nude, sitting in the Senate chambers, claiming he was the governor. We, of course, had legislators targeted by an assassin as well in their homes. So security for our elected officials is top of mind, and many have been complaining about a lack of security at the Capitol. It's tricky because you want it to be open to the public, but you also want everyone to be safe. To get the update on the new upgrades at the Capitol, let's get to the head of the State Patrol, Colonel Christina Bogoyevic, who is with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Tell us, you know, how I'm glad that you guys took action, and we're glad that you got it started today.
Yes, as we started to look internally on what we could do immediately, rather than waiting for the third-party assessment to be completed, we knew one of those actions was to limit the number of public entrances into the Capitol building. And so we took three public areas with 14 doors, and we narrowed that down to two public areas with four doors, additionally allowing one key card access through the Senate building parking ramp.
So staff members and people who are need to be there all the time can get in. That makes sense. At this point, there's no metal detectors or anything like that. You need more buy-in from more people. Is that sort of what we're waiting for on that type of a move?
So some of those larger changes may come out in that third-party assessment, and those changes would be talked through as we look at the Capitol Advisory Committee and those meetings along with legislative leaders. A lot of, again, those larger security items need to be legislatively approved.
So what we'll have is maybe more Capitol security officers, perhaps more State Patrol at those public doors, just to, frankly, I want to make sure the staff members and the legislators, where this is their workplace, that they feel safe.
Safety is extremely important to us for all of those hundreds of thousands of visitors every day that come into the Capitol, along with the legislators that work in that building every day. Our Capitol security build relationships with those they work alongside with. And so we need to ensure we're doing and addressing, again, those safety concerns. Since the horrific events of June 14th, we have put additional staffing at the Capitol with additional marked squads around the Capitol grounds. Again, just to ensure we know the public and the legislators want to feel safe. And so what can we do to ensure that they feel safe? And what can we do from an agency standpoint to address those safety and security issues?
Colonel, I know the Star Tribune also has reported on this notification system, an alert system used for legislators about emergencies. I think any parent who sends a kid off to college, you sort of know this type of system, right, where an alert gets pushed out to your phone. Why wasn't this used on the day of the political assassinations in Minnesota?
So you are talking about the Everbridge system, and the Minnesota State Patrol is responsible for the security of legislators on the Capitol grounds. That Everbridge system was set up for alerts specific to locations or buildings on the Capitol grounds, and not just legislators could sign up for that. So anyone who works on the Capitol grounds. But it's also important to address that it's a voluntary system. We cannot direct or command people to sign up for that system. We can only say that system is available. But again, it was very area specific to specific areas on the Capitol complex.
And now is there discussion about whether that could be expanded? I think most people think like, well, that would be a good idea.
So we are in constant communication with legislative leaders and Sergeant at Arms to talk about what that expansion would look like. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, a lot of this stuff that seems obvious and that are questions that are being asked today are things that this was really sort of an unprecedented thing in the state of Minnesota and frankly around the country. So I am glad to see that you guys have taken action so quickly before that review is done to try to, you know, make the Capitol a little safer, but still keep it open because it is the people's house.
I completely agree. It is a fine balance between security and openness into the Capitol area and into the Capitol building itself. And again, we take that responsibility seriously, and we will continually assess what those security measures look like, including stakeholders around the Capitol grounds.
Chief of the State Patrol, Colonel Christina Bogoyevich. Colonel, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Big changes, but needed. And it's impressive to see we didn't wait for a commission, for a thing, for a review. Like, let's go. Next in the lead, a chance to, well, save a life, really. Hundreds of pets in a Minneapolis shelter need homes, and they're taking a big step on Wednesday to try to make it Wednesdays to try to make it a little easier for you. I think this is really cool. So we wanted to talk to Danielle Jorger from Minneapolis Animal Care and Control. She's the supervisor there, and she's with us live on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Danielle, it's good to visit with you. What are you guys doing over the next couple months?
Well, thank you so much for having us. So, yeah, throughout all of August and September, every Wednesday, we are offering fee-waived adoptions. This means we got a grant from the ASPCA, the Rescue Effect is the big promotion that they're doing right now. And it's a campaign to help support, animals in shelters getting new homes so that the shelters can help other animals. And so what that entails is anybody that comes to adopt, whether you're a resident or non-resident, because we do have slightly different fees for both, it is going to cover that adoption fee, or it'll cover the licensing fee. That's the fee that residents pay in order to adopt.
And what is that fee? Is that often is that an issue? Is that something that maybe prevents people from adopting?
For some, we are probably one of the least expensive shelters or rescues to adopt from. Right now, if you're a Minneapolis resident, you don't pay an adoption fee. You just pay a licensing fee that has to be done in a city, which is no more than $30. And then if you are a non-resident, it is $100 for a dog or $25 for a cat. And then the only animal that has a slightly higher, if it's a puppy that is 6 months or younger, it's a $250 adoption fee.
Danielle Jorger is with us, Minneapolis Animal Care and Control. How many animals do you guys have, like on a typical, I don't know, today, what do you have there, I guess?
So today when I walked in the building, we had 100 animals just in the building. We have a good other probably 30 to 40 out in foster that we're supporting as well.
100? This is just the city of Minneapolis, 100?
Correct.
Wow.
Yep. Between dogs, cats, and we actually have some critters right now. We had 100 in the building.
What's going on? Why do you think you have so many? Or is that the new normal for you guys?
It's somewhat become the new normal for us. I mean, it is higher. Our intakes have continued to increase year over year ever since 2020. There's a lot of factors. One of the biggest ones we hear is like housing instability and other factors of people not being able to afford keeping their pets with them.
Sure. Yeah, you think, wow, that's so interesting. Like another sort of ripple effect of uncertainty with the housing. I think, man, Danielle, I think people don't understand like the high cost of rent, the instability in the economy. It affects mm-hmm. so many different things that maybe aren't obvious on first blush.
Oh, absolutely. This is, you know, we never knew what kinds of things would come from COVID and other things that happened, you know, in the economy and in the world. And pets are part of that. They're a big part of a lot of people's households and families. But when they're affected, it affects the pets, too.
So ASPCA gives you a grant of $13,000 or so. And so that's significant money. And you're able to do this. Today was the first day.
Correct.
And you're going to do this straight through the end of September, right?
Yep. Every Wednesday in August and September, we will be running this fee-waived adoptions from the grant itself. Today, we already had 14 adoptions, 7 cats and 7 dogs left to their new homes.
Huh. Cool. All right. Very good. And can people, like, see what you have in the shelter? Is there a way to see before they come, or should they just pop
on over? Absolutely. Nope. I mean, they can do either, but they are on our website. Everything that's available for adoption is on our website, and you can view the cats, dogs, and critters that are ready to go on there ahead of time. It is real time, so it's updated about every 20 minutes.
Are we talking guinea pigs? Is that the...
We have 2 guinea pigs right now, yep, and a mouse. Right. Mouse isn't quite ready for adoption, but we also have a pet mouse.
I'm looking at Nyx and Stevie. So Stevie and Nyx would have been the better way to say that, but the two guinea pigs who you have up for adoption. Pretty cool. Well, I appreciate all the work that you guys do trying to find pets homes. The investment that the city has in this is significant, and it makes our community better. But people from any city can take advantage of this on Wednesdays. Pretty cool.
Absolutely. Or any day of the week, come on down and adopt if you're looking for a new friend.
All right. I used to have Danielle on the Channel 4 Noon Show back when we were doing, like, pet adoptions.
Yes. Yes, we did.
Back in the day. So very good. It's nice to visit with you again. Thanks, Danielle.
Thanks so much, Jason.
Pretty cool. Go if you are looking for a dog or looking for a cat, check the Minneapolis Animal Care and Control. Pretty cool. Free adoption. Wednesdays only. So you can wait till next Wednesday. That is The Lead. Page 2 coming your way in just a minute. New York Times is going to go in depth on one of Minnesota and America's biggest companies. And Justin Jefferson is selling his home. And I'm sort of sad about it. His unexpected sale price. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Brayton, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Brayton wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, page 2 of the D Rush Hour news headlines begins with a New York Times profile going deep on one of Minnesota and America's biggest companies, United Health Group. Which, over the last 2 years, the New York Times writes it's been hit with just about every misfortune that can befall a company. A gargantuan cyber attack, federal investigators, a criminal inquiry into one of its most important businesses, the murder of a top executive, a public relations crisis, disappointing, I mean, on and on and on. The old CEO is back, Stephen Hemsley, who is 73. He's getting $60 million in stock options. Steve's going to be fine. I would come out of retirement. Like if TV called me up and they're like, all right, Jason, we would like to bring you out of your television retirement. I would come out. I would probably do it for, I'd do it for 5% of that. United Health is kind of a paradox. The size of the company allows it, in theory, to improve healthcare for all of us, right? They have the power to sort of get their will. And so if they're working for good, it is very good. If they are working, well, that's what federal investigators are looking into. There is a growing consensus among policymakers that Medicare Advantage, and these are those plans that people buy and opt into, and they're very successful, and people are obviously choosing to pay to have Medicare Advantage. But they say part of the problem is that insurers use diagnostic codes that overstate patient illnesses. And so They're fleecing the government, is what a lot of policymakers think. The youngest drivers are the worst drivers, especially the younger men. Cairo TV in Seattle writing this story, and it's pretty interesting. It's a story that digs deep into the most recent data on auto injuries. So it's looking at 2023. When you look at people between the ages of 15 and 24, 203,000 of them were hurt as a result of crashes. Under 20, the most at risk. And you say, my first thought was like, well, maybe there are a lot of young people on the road. Nope. 5% of all licensed motorists are under 20s, but they account for 12.6% of collisions. And I can say, someone who totaled my father's station wagon at age 16 on the way to the homecoming dance when I allegedly failed to yield to oncoming traffic while turning left, we are stupid at that age. Maybe even more stupid today, because 84.5% of drivers who are 19 to 24 say they know that texting or using your phone is dangerous. And 45% of drivers those ages admit that they sent a text or used their phone in the last month. Justin Jefferson is selling his home, but I think you are going to be a little surprised at how modest the Vikings receiver's home is.
I'm a one person. I ain't got no big family, man. I don't need to be in no, you know, $10 million mansion. That's not something that I came from. I grew up with parents that was grateful for what they have, and I was grateful for what I grew up with. So I never grew up having no big old house. So, you know, maybe I'll move on to that. Maybe not. So I guess we'll find out sooner or later.
That was Justin Jefferson talking to reporters at Vikings training camp last year, because you might remember that Netflix show Receiver shot video of JJ in a very non-Vikings player kind of home. Amber Grove Heights, typical townhome, generic. You look at it, and if you're on the stream, you can the video stream on YouTube, you can see the picture of this house. I'm going to show you the listing as well. So I found the listing. Coming soon. $439,000. I mean, it's nice. It's a 4-bedroom, 3.5-bath, 2,300 square feet. Like, this is a nice townhome.
It's nice when you can buy a house with the spare change in your couch cushions.
Justin Jefferson signed a 4-year, $140 million contract. He is one of the few Minnesotans who could afford the most expensive listing that is currently on the market right now in Minnesota. And that would be a $55 million Lake Minnetonka mansion. He could afford it. Now, don't you love the humbleness? Don't you love? I mean, and also, like, you know what, JJ, you got paid. Go get the mansion. Maybe like a $5 million. Like, going from a $400,000 townhome to a $10 million home has got to be something. Something else. That's the D-Rush Hour News headlines. The lead in page 2 in just a minute. It's your time to say, I've had enough. What have you had enough of? Dan and I have some items on our list. What are you sick and tired of? 651-461-9226. You can send us a voice message, too, if you use the Odyssey app. What have you had enough of? I'd love to hear about it from you. Drive Time, coming back in just a minute.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.